really helped me improve the Ring of Honor style of wrestling, as I like to put it. And he really helped me get over that hump just by his mind, because I'm never going to be the high-flying, super spot-fested wrestler. But Kevin's not like that either. And he really showed me a way to be able to incorporate my style of wrestling but still make it entertaining to these very difficult Ring of Honor fans. And believe it or not, a lot of that program was put together by me and Kevin, a lot by Kevin, a lot by me, and our ideas, a lot of the promos, a lot of the ideas going forward, stretcher match, everything was really our brainchild. And that's what's great about Ring of Honor is we have a lot of say in what we do. And to this day, that stretcher match was probably my favorite match at Ring of Honor that I've had. And I owe so much to Kevin. I can't, like, honestly, it's going to sound like I'm kissing his ass, but I have so much respect for him. And he's done so much in that short period of time that I can't thank him enough. And I seriously, I don't have enough nice things to say about him.
Sure. Well, I think the thing is, you know, me, Steen, and the Bucks are so passionate about PWG. And, we love PWG so much. And then on top of that, in real life, we're all, like, really, really close friends. So what you see on screen, oftentimes, is very real. It's me, the Bucks, and Kevin Steen just going out there and having a blast. I started doing a little bit of a heel run in PWG, and Kevin Steen had seen it, and Kevin really believed in the character. He really believed in my abilities. So he was a big part in me becoming a main event player at PWG, because Kevin believed in me so much. So working with those guys, having those guys put that faith in me, really gave me the confidence that I needed to perform at that main event level. So I owe a lot to those guys.
He's an every man kind of guy, a blue-collar guy, kind of like Canada's Stone Cold in a way, but with a little bit of Mike Awesome twisted in there with the amazing, like, just unorthodox high-flying he does, and you can see it just explode out of nowhere. So he's a really interesting guy, and it's been a really interesting year. I mean, it's been a long time since Canada had a guy like that that you could get behind, you can market, and is a player at the top level. I mean, it's been unfortunate for, it seems like, after Edge, there was just like this real big gap on the national stage, internationally too, where you had Canada wrestlers featured in the main event. So it's cool to see a guy like this ascend, see a guy like this just owning a crowd at the main event level, and he's worked his ass off. He's a do-it-yourself kind of guy across the board. His merch, his YouTube shows, I mean, this guy hustles, and that's paid off well for him so far in his career.
I always look at, like, there's an elite group in independent wrestling that you put, like, who has had the biggest impact. You know, you have the CM Punks and the Daniel Bryans and the Samoa Joe, these guys who really put indie wrestling on the map, and you got to put Kevin on there right now. Between him and the Young Bucks, there's nobody, I think, that are doing more for professional wrestling than him in independent wrestling. So I really hope he makes millions and millions of dollars. If he doesn't, it's not his fault, because he has everything it takes to be one of the greatest wrestlers, honestly, of all time. I know that kind of people, but seriously, he honestly does.
Yeah, that was an absolute blast for me to wrestle Kevin in Toronto and have the audience be as invested as they were.
His legacy is that he, like I said, he's up there with the Punks and the Joes and the Bryans, and it's so hard because I honestly, the wrestling I love, I would put him as the greatest Ring of Honor performer, and that's just my opinion. So fans, do not attack me, because that's not me shitting on Punk, that's not me shitting on Bryan, because I think the absolute world of those guys, but in my eyes, he put a time where people were really crapping on the company, and he still kept it on the map. They're like, the reaction he gets when he goes out there is like none other. The company tried so hard to make him a heel when he was, invading it in sort, and he made Scum and this and that, and he was still so over as a babyface. How he connects with people, I don't think there's ever been anyone in Ring of Honor that connects with the people as much as he does, and he's really, I feel like, if done right, he's on that level that The Rock was with connecting to people, where people just connect with him, and they love to see him come out, and they just, he has that everyday person personality, but he can flip it and be the crazy one, or he can flip it and be absolutely hysterical. You see the stuff he did with Stump where he was evil. You see the stuff he did with Young Buck where he was so funny. And it's just, he has such a wide range of roles that he can play. So I would honestly, if we're making like a top 10 list of great Ring of Honor, in my eyes, he's number one.
Freak out, another week of wrestling chit-chat right here on My Condo on the Moon. Lots of news, lots of rumors, lots of things in the air. Are you ready to talk some professional wrestling, Chris Walder?
Hey, you know it, buddy. And unlike last night, there's more to talk about than just Battleground. A very busy week.
Yeah, I mean, we did touch on Battleground last night on our video show. If you did not check that out, we encourage you, go on condoonthemoon.com, check out Hanging on the Moon. It's our new video podcast on Google+. We're doing it every Thursday now at 7:30 p.m. If you choose to check it out live, we encourage you to do so and be part of the program on Thursdays. For the podcast here on Fridays, though, it is just us and whatever guests we come across to bring on the program. This week, it is just me, myself, James Borbath, and Chris Walder, though. And that's a good thing, actually, because there's a lot to talk about in the world of wrestling. We did touch on Battleground quite a lot in the video podcast, so I wanted to touch on something that we were going to touch on the video podcast, and we didn't quite get around to it because Chris Walder got me all upset about Mark Madden and WCW and him going after ROH. And what I really wanted to talk about Ring of Honor-wise was this is, of course, a huge weekend for the company. They are in Cincinnati tonight where Kevin Steen will take on Silas Young. And then tomorrow night they head to Dearborn, Michigan for Kevin Steen's final match in Ring of Honor versus Steve Corino. Just a very important guy for this company and just means so much. I wrote an article. By the time people are listening to this podcast, it will be out on BetweenTheRopes.com. Just talking about what Kevin Steen has meant to me and what he's meant to Ring of Honor and just the independent wrestling scene in general. I think Kevin Steen, if he is indeed on his way to WWE, will be sorely missed, not just by Ring of Honor, but by independent wrestling as a whole. Because I think, for lack of a better term, and some people might take offense to this, but I don't think they should, Kevin Steen really is the face of independent wrestling right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But at the same time, when guys are in the independent wrestling scene, I think they're always striving to do bigger and better things. And whether people like to admit it or not, WWE is the ultimate endgame. And reports are out there that Steen is going to be working in NXT come August, September. So I'm happy for the guy. He really deserves this opportunity. But it's a sad time for Ring of Honor independent wrestling. You're right. Steen was arguably their biggest star.
And I think for those who question whether Steen can actually make it in the WWE, my answer to them is simply, have you seen this guy work? Because the way he connects with people, you really have to experience it and be in the building to see it. Because he has a gift that few performers in wrestling have, in that ability to connect with the audience. In a wrestling world where it's so easy not to care, it's so hard to not care about Kevin Steen.
He was a big fish in a small pond, and now it's time to see if he can translate that over to the bigger stage. He's going to have to start from the bottom and work his way up like everyone has to do, regardless of what reputation they have away from WWE. But he's a star, and the company will figure out a way to use him properly, at least I hope.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a guy who a lot of people didn't think would get his opportunity in WWE for some of the stigmas that they've had about their product in recent years with guys of Kevin Steen's body type, for lack of a better term, just not being people that they would look at. But I think when you look at the opportunity that's in front of Kevin Steen, or whatever he ends up being called in WWE, I think a large part of the thanks to that goes to a guy like Bray Wyatt, who has had tremendous success in the NXT system and now in the WWE, and will be, of course, one of the feature matches on Battleground, taking on Chris Jericho. I think there's no question, if Bray Wyatt doesn't have the success, I'm not sure that door is open for Kevin Steen.
Yeah, Wyatt was kind of a pioneer in that sense, but at the same time, WWE has really stepped up its developmental center, you know, the training facilities and whatnot, and Wyatt, you know, if you look at him maybe 2 years ago, he was a tad overweight and a tad sluggish, but he's put on muscle, he's leaned up a bit, he's in the best shape of his career, and I think you can say the same thing for Steen. If he has those same opportunities, which he will have, he could be put in the same situation like Wyatt. I don't know if he's ever going to hit the same, you know, pedestal that Wyatt is currently on. I mean, he's about to wrestle Chris Jericho. He's in the main event scene, but it's not going to be due to a lack of trying, at least for Steen.
And we mentioned on the video podcast a bunch of interviews that Brian Fritz had done with some stars from NXT. Brian Fritz keeps the hits on coming today with a great interview with Bray Wyatt and a rare interview with Bray Wyatt that I encourage everyone who's listening to this, after you're done listening to us, the Yammer, go on BetweenTheRopes.com, go check out the interview Brian Fritz did with Bray Wyatt. It is very, very interesting, to say the least. Bray, a guy who, in a world where kayfabe is pretty much dead, he brings it back alive a little bit in this interview, and really interesting stuff with him and Brian Fritz. Not that he was, you know, acting like a total goofball in kayfabe, but there were certain moments in that interview where the line between Bray Wyatt the man and Bray Wyatt the character is very thin, if at all.
And he was still sporting that shiner on his left eye from Ric Flair at the house show. But I watched the first 5 minutes of the interview. It was really good. Kudos to Brian for it. Bray, staying in character, using his little raspy voice, but giving straightforward answers, and it's a refreshing thing to watch.
Yeah, it was a really interesting interview and a really good job done by Brian and, you know, Bray. I didn't know how he got that eye. That was the one question that isn't tackled in that interview. What happened to his eye? And watching that interview, you could clearly see his eye got dinged up. Ric Flair did that?
Ric Flair did that to him at a house show.
Oh, no. Like, Ric Flair just causing trouble this week in the WWE.
But Bray had no problem with it. Reports say backstage, he was actually honored that he was able to work with Ric Flair in the first place, and the fact that he got a black eye was just dirt off his shoulder.
Yeah, it was a badge. It would be a badge of honor to get injured by Ric Flair, I suppose.
It earned him a lot of respect, actually, backstage, because apparently a lot of other guys would have just been like, screw Flair, I can't believe he dinged me up like that. But Wyatt was very humble and was just happy to be working with a 16-time world champion. And trust me, his stock right now with the boys is rising day by day.
How the heck did this happen, though? Because Ric Flair obviously didn't wrestle a match. He's not allowed to wrestle, right?
He made an appearance. I could be wrong, and if someone's listening to this and knows that I'm wrong, they can correct me on Twitter at Walder Sports. But I believe it was at Madison Square Garden. They were doing a live event, and the main event was John Cena versus Bray Wyatt in a lumberjack match. And the lumberjacks were split up. Half of them were Ric Flair's guys, and half of them were Triple H's guys. And then it eventually broke down to the point where Flair got in the ring and attacked Wyatt.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is true, because Flair was booked on that MSG show, as was his daughter, Charlotte Flair, which she talks about in the interview with Brian. We're putting Brian over big time on the podcast this week, but that's okay. I write for his site, Between the Ropes. It's a good publication. Go check it out.
And just a quick fact, WWE.com just posted an article about the 10 best matches of 2014 so far. And at number two was Charlotte's match with Natalya at NXT TakeOver.
And deservedly so. It was a great match. I'm not sure I would rank it number two, but it was fantastic. I think if I was doing that, just off the top of my head, because we didn't plan this, obviously, I think the two matches Sami Zayn had I would rank above that. The match he had with Cesaro at the first NXT special event, and then the match he had with Tyler Breeze, both of those were off the chain, really great matches.
Well, Cesaro versus Zayn did make the list. I believe it came in at number 5. Number 1, if memory serves me correctly, was the Wyatt family versus the Shield at Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, that had a huge buzz, and that was a great match. Just the feel of that match alone was something we haven't seen in WWE in a long time.
Agreed.
But the fact that we're mentioning NXT matches as part of the best matches the WWE is putting on in a year, I don't know what that speaks to. Does it speak to a bright future for the WWE, or the fact that this roster hasn't really been producing at the level maybe they should, and maybe it's a kick in the pants to them, and it's only going to get better, you would assume, with NXT. I mean, we talked off the top, Kevin Steen is coming, apparently. We know that Kenta's coming. We know Prince Devitt is coming. I mean, these are three guys right there that are all capable of having matches that you could put on a list of matches of the year, and they're going to be part of that NXT system. So, boy, oh boy, the pressure from down below in NXT has never been greater for the people on the main roster.
I think it's just a testament to how strong the NXT roster is. I mean, you have your Cesaros, who was down there earlier in the year. You have Adrian Neville, Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn. And when you're down there in a developmental system, you're always trying to put forth your best foot, your best work, because you want to get on the main roster. And I think some guys who do get to the big time and are appearing on Raw and SmackDown every week kind of get complacent. They kind of get comfortable, and they don't actually put forth 100% effort all of the time. So when you're down in NXT, you want to get to that spot and overtake some of those guys. And at this point, they're allowing them to do so.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think, when you think about NXT and you look for a comparable, it compares very much so with what goes on in Ring of Honor, I think. Because Ring of Honor has that same feel where everyone is out to steal the show and everyone is putting out their maximum effort on a given card, whether it be a house show, a special event, whatever the heck it is, Ring of Honor and NXT, these guys just bring it on a weekly basis whenever they're out there, and I think the two companies are comparable in that sense.
No, I'll definitely agree with that, and people on the main roster need to be looking over their shoulders because, I mean, as we've seen over the last year, some of the top guys in the company right now are former NXT stars, like the Shield, like the Wyatt family, you know, Cesaro as well. So it's an exciting time, and it doesn't surprise me at all to see some of the best matches of the year in NXT. They have the best workers.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe with all the troubles they've been having with the WWE Network, maybe that's something that WWE needs to focus more on, promoting the fact that, hey, you know, you can see all the future stars on NXT every week on the WWE Network, because some of the stuff you're seeing down there is just flat out better than what I see on Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis.
That's one of the best things about the WWE Network. You get to see the NXT stars every week, and then those four main shows that they're going to be doing per year, like Arrival and TakeOver, are arguably the best shows they've put on. You know, I mean, I have a soft spot for WrestleMania 30, but Arrival and TakeOver are right there.
Yeah, I think WrestleMania 30, obviously, for a lot of reasons, was their best show of the year. But, that said, those two NXT shows were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, if we're judging on a totally equal playing field, they have a lesser an hour when they do the NXT shows. They're only 2 hours as opposed to three, WrestleMania being four. So there's differences there. But, all in all, NXT is really knocking it out of the park, and that, I mean, whether people like it or not, that's Triple H. That's Triple H's baby. That's Triple H's influence. All these guys that are coming up through the system, these are guys that Triple H has handpicked to be in the positions that they are.
Well, it's been a process to get to this point. I mean, back in the day, when they had ECW on Sci-Fi, when they got rid of the whole extreme feel, they basically turned it into a developmental system where they were bringing up guys from Florida Championship Wrestling. And now it's come full circle. You have the Full Sail University putting on the shows. You have the training facility. And Triple H deserves all the credit in the world.
Yeah, basically there was an abyss in WWE developmental, and that is when Johnny Ace, a.k.a. Johnny Laurinaitis, was running developmental, because if anyone trashed what the WWE was doing on that level, it was John Laurinaitis. He did such a terrible job. I mean, when you look at all of the people that came in during his era as in charge of talent relations or whatever, how many of them are stars? I can't even think of one.
What kind of names are you referring to here?
Well, I mean, he was. That's the point. What are those names? There isn't any. He didn't develop any stars in the time he was in charge of developmental. He was too busy picking hot-looking girls to be divas to be bothered with actually finding, like, actual wrestlers.
Are you telling me Kazarni was never a star?
Probably not. Probably never made it, you know, made it to wrestle crap and other sites like that, but no, did not make it big time in the WWE. But I think Triple H has really turned that whole system around and turned it upside down and inside out, and it's really a joy to watch it now. I mean, it really is. You still have your odd Mojo Rawleys that make me cringe, but hey, it is what it is.
Hey, I can't wait to get to the point where we see Kevin Steen versus Sami Zayn in NXT, man.
Or maybe together. They were a tag team at one time in Ring of Honor, too, so you never know what you'll see out of those two if they end up there at the same time. Obviously, Sami has a history with pretty much all of these guys that are coming in. He's well aware of Kenta. He's well aware of Prince Devitt, and obviously Kevin Steen is basically his best friend. I mean, if you close your eyes and listen to Sami Zayn do an interview, you think you're listening to Kevin Steen, because they sound almost identical.
Well, I doubt they're going to be a tag team, although that would be a good idea. The division could use the boost. I think back they had, when Cassius Ohno was down there, him and Cesaro were both in NXT at the same time, but they never brought back the Kings of Wrestling, which was a shame. I think that would have been nice for two guys like us who are followers of Ring of Honor. But yeah, just the dynamic of Steen being there with all of these guys that he's worked with, and like you said, with Sami Zayn being able to go up against the Devitts and the Kentas of the world, it's exciting.
It is. It's an exciting time for NXT, and it's an exciting time for the WWE. What isn't exciting for the WWE, though, and we touched on it in that little ramble about the developmental system in NXT, the WWE Network is just in a shambles. I was embarrassed by that Monday Night Raw we had this past Monday. I felt dirty after watching it. I felt like I watched a 3-hour infomercial for the WWE Network, which we technically, legally cannot get in Canada. So that maybe was kind of the cherry on top of the sundae for me. But obviously the WWE Network, there's some major hills to climb. They are expected to announce a number. I believe it's at the end of this month, of how many subscribers they have. Clear to say they're not happy with that number.
I'm not expecting big things from that number. And then, lest we forget, by the time Night of Champions rolls through in September, that's when the six-month subscription fee for all the people who do currently have the network, they can get out of their contract. So I wouldn't want to be in the position where I have to organize the network. And like you said, with Monday Night Raw, they were plugging the hell out of that thing. It was getting really annoying. That was the last night of the free trial, which we both experienced. Well, I at least experienced. You, I forget. Were you able to watch the network?
No, I was as well. I got it as well. I figured a way around the system and was able to watch it. And I'd had an experience with it before, because I had to do some things for work and kind of manipulate the system. But I'm not going to go to all the trouble to do that to get the network now. But the simple fact of the reality is, a lot of people have, and that should scare the WWE too, because when they launch internationally, they're expecting to kind of prop up these numbers, and if there's as many people out there as it seems there is, they've got a big problem internationally, because there's a lot of people in Canada, in the UK, and other places that are watching the WWE Network right now by nefarious means.
And also, we touched about this last night, I believe, anyway, people just sharing accounts, which is what I was doing for a little bit there. And even, you know, regardless of how many accounts can use the network at once, and when it does come to Canada, it's not exactly something that I'm ready to put down my $10 for per month. I understand the convenience of getting all of the pay-per-views because you're going to be paying maybe $50-$55 otherwise if you just get them individually. But, you know, I want to see more from the WWE with consistently good pay-per-views, because like with Battleground this Sunday, the card looks good, but it's not something that I really need to see. And I think that's the problem with the WWE Network, especially when those subscribers are able to get out of their contracts. They might realize, you know, during the six-month span, is this something, it's nice, I can go back and watch all of the old stuff, but do I really need this, and is it worth my money?
I think it's worth the investment initially, but as time goes on, the worth of it will be challenged because they haven't really done a lot with original programming. And I don't know if we talked about this on a podcast or I just wrote about this, but there was talk, you know, they're slashing the budget in terms of their programming. There's not going to be a Legends House 2, last we heard, because they've cut that out entirely. They were going to do Tough Enough. It didn't start on time. Now that's been pushed back to who knows when, if at all. I mean, they're not creating a heck of a lot of original content for this network. And, I mean, they really need to do that. I mean, they have had some home runs, and they have one coming, I think, in the Monday Night Wars. I think that documentary series, if the first episode was any indication, that thing is going to be must-see TV for people who either lived through that time and era or didn't. I think that first episode was the WWE at its very best.
Well, see, that's where my opinion differs with you. I haven't seen the Monday Night Wars special, so I'm kind of talking in the dark here, but I feel like everything that they're going to do for that documentary is basically stuff they've touched on through other DVDs. Like, if you were going to go back and... How many DVDs has WWE done about, like, the New World Order? And it's just a rehash of just old material and old interviews and old footage. And I feel like, okay, maybe with this Monday Night Wars thing, it's just going to be a little bit more of that.
It is, but it's also mixed in with new stuff. And what's great about it is they've taken that new stuff, merged it with the old stuff, and it's very... It's very good. And what they've also done smartly is they brought their own talent in who was growing up during the time, and they react to it from their perspective as fans at the time. And it really, it creates for a great dynamic. If you haven't seen it, it's hard to explain, but trust me, it's one of the best things I've seen the WWE do in a long, long time in terms of a one-hour documentary program. It was really good, and if the series is like that, I've been told, I think there's 20 episodes of it all totaled. If the other 19 are half as good as this one, they've got a winner on their hands. But that's the thing, they have to come up with more ideas like this and more concepts where they can take the strengths of what they do and make that evident on the network. And I think one of the things the WWE has always been good at is the documentaries. I think they do a wonderful job. But you touched on another thing, and this is something I had heard mentioned. I don't know if it was Meltzer or who it was that brought this up, but it was a very salient point. Once the WWE starts taking their documentaries and putting them on the network, like they did with CM Punk's, to get Lord knows what they thought they were going to get out of that. But just as the example of taking an old DVD like that and bringing it onto the network, now when a WWE DVD comes out, maybe why would I want to go get it? Like, Paul Heyman's is supposed to be coming out in the fall. Maybe if I'm a WWE Network subscriber, I like Heyman, but I can wait till it comes on the network.
Yeah, that's a good point. And just like the CM Punk DVD, I believe, I'd have to double check, but you could still watch it on the American Netflix. It was up there for a year or so. So, I mean, WWE is just throwing darts at a wall, seeing what sticks. And like you touched on earlier with, like, Legends House Season 2 not being renewed, I think fans are a lot smarter and they don't buy into this whole, WWE's trying to get into reality television. You know, the same thing with Total Divas. It's a compelling watch once in a while, but we all know it's fabricated stuff.
Yeah, but as much as Total Divas, I'm not a fan of it and all that, I will admit this. it was a much better constructed reality show than the Legends House was. I mean, it was obvious that they had professionals doing Total Divas, and it was the WWE just trying to do reality television with Legends House. It was night and day.
Well, that, and it's believable to think that the Divas just don't like each other. We know these legends have worked with each other for 30, 40 years maybe, and we know that they're related. Like when Pat Patterson came out of the closet and revealed that he was gay on the final episode, like, everyone in the room knew that was the case. Even people at home knew.
Yeah, everyone knows. It was the worst-kept secret in wrestling. I mean, when they did that special for Bret Hart on the network that they showed, he made that kind of off-color joke about Pat Patterson that kind of the WWE wasn't exactly keen about. So it is what it is. But I think the point we're getting at, the WWE, they're all in on this network, and they got to figure out a way to make it work. Because they are fully invested in this. They've taken away revenue from different places and have it all lined up in this network. And if they don't make this network work, they're in a lot of hot water.
I guess CM Punk got out at the right time, eh? Especially with these pay-per-view checks and whatnot.
Yeah, obviously, you know, podcasting is the way to go.
Exactly.
We are on the tip. We're just not former professional wrestlers, unfortunately, and getting like a million downloads a week. That's unfortunate for us.
But yeah, that's what interests me the most about this network is the paychecks that the guys are getting, because I've been reading reports about, especially last year at WrestleMania, some guys were getting maybe $25,000, $30,000 bonus checks for their appearances on the show. And
it's not happening this year.
Yeah, they're lucky to even break two or three.
Yeah, it's going to be a major culture shock. And those checks are supposed to be coming out soon. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone has the kahunas to talk about this. Because once that can is open, my oh my, it's going to be a very interesting ride for the WWE after that.
Well, we know one guy who had the cojones to at least make a somewhat of a fuss about it, and he is now no longer a part of the company, officially, anyway.
And won't be getting one of those checks. CM Punk, of course. No word on the podcast, just that cryptic tweet that he will start a band, start a fire, and start a podcast. Two of those three things are true. Well, one is maybe two. We don't know. But CM Punk, I'll be interested to see what he actually does with this podcast, because I think what fans will expect and want won't be what they get from CM Punk, because I think, by and large, you're just going to get all the stuff that CM Punk likes. And that is wrestling, but it's also a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, if you're expecting just a pure wrestling podcast, if CM Punk does decide to get behind a microphone like that, you're dead wrong. He's going to be talking about music. He's going to be talking about sports. He's going to be interviewing his friends, talking about old times. So it's still going to be interesting, and I'm looking forward to listening to it. But, you know, it's not going to be like what you're hearing with guys like Chris Jericho and Jim Ross, where it's predominantly wrestling.
And incidentally, as we mentioned on Thursday's podcast, the video podcast, we'll mention it again. That is our poll question this week on condoonthemoon.com. Will you be listening to CM Punk's podcast? And we give you a number of options for that. Not just simple yes and no, but yes, no matter what. Yes, if he's going to talk wrestling. No, or you're undecided, sitting on the fence.
No, so, sitting on the fence. You got to come up with an answer, people.
No. People can be undecided. I mean, that's kind of how the world works. Apparently, a lot of people are undecided on the WWE Network.
Good point.
So, with that said, you know, I don't know. The WWE Network, they really have to kind of figure out what they're doing here, because I think the UFC has gone the right route, and they've clearly gone the wrong route. And at the beginning, UFC was the ones taking all the flack. I mean, when Fight Pass came out and when WWE Network came out just after that, boy, Dana White was taking heat for Fight Pass. People were saying, this is Mickey Mouse in comparison to WWE Network. Like, what are you doing, Dana White? Like, I thought the UFC was this big, thriving company, and here's the WWE just blowing you out of the water. And I think not having experienced Fight Pass, but from people that have experienced both, there's no question the WWE does have the better mousetrap in the sense of the way the site's constructed, the ease and navigation and all that, which even to some extent people are upset with what the WWE has done. But from the standpoint of just comparing apples to apples, the WWE network is superior. But when you get into what each company has invested in it, it's a whole different ballgame, because for the UFC, this is just auxiliary revenue. I mean, if they have however many subscribers they have to Fight Pass, it doesn't really affect their bottom line. It's added revenue. It's not taking away from any of their revenue. And UFC isn't a publicly traded company, so when those moments come where they have to come up with numbers like the WWE will at the end of the month, UFC doesn't have to do that.
They've invested so much into this network, into something that was never proven. Like, they just kind of jumped into it. I realized that it took, you know, a couple of years before they perfected what they were going to do. At one point, they were actually considering doing just a straight television network, and now they decided to...
Oh, the vision has changed like 3-4 times during the process of this.
Yeah.
Originally, the WWE network was supposed to look like NBA TV does, or MLB TV, or something like that. It's nothing like that. They've changed the model consistently to where we have today with an online model. And don't get me wrong, at the end of the day, I think the WWE is actually ahead of the curve, because this is where everyone's heading. There's no question in my mind this is the future of how content is going to be provided. But did they jump too soon, and have they invested too much into jumping too soon? That's the problem here.
It's all about execution. If they can't execute, this is going to end up being a failure. And they're probably pissing off a lot of their talent now because of the lack of money going out, because of the pay-per-view revenue. It's all through the network right now. So it's going to take time. I mean, we're less than a year into this thing. It's going to take a couple of years before we determine whether the network is a success or not. But right now, it's shaky ground, for sure.
On the other side of it, though, the WWE, I think, will be better and stronger for it. That's what I'm getting at. And that almost speaks to another story that came out this week, which makes me kind of laugh in a way. What goes on with the stock market, I have no idea. Because now, did you hear this news earlier in the week that Fox tried to buy out Time Warner?
I had not heard that, no.
Okay, so Fox, which owns like Fox News, Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, all of those, all the Fox stuff, they tried to buy out the former company that owned WCW in Time Warner Cable and all the Time Warner stuff. They were unsuccessful in their $80 billion bid. However, people in the stock game thought that with the WWE, with this new unique platform of the network and what they're doing, that maybe someone wants to buy them now. Hence, the stock price went up like 6.5% the other day.
Oh, jeez. My goodness. Yeah, don't get me started about stock market. And
well, we might have to bring back stock watch, is my point,
no.
Chris Walder. We might have to do it.
Oh, it hurts.
Every
it's
week, check in with the WWE stock and see where it's heading. What people think about the WWE who know nothing about the WWE.
Sell.
No, it's buy now. It's buy because someone is going to buy that company from Vince McMahon. He is going to go off and live on an island and live the good life. Although, if you read the article that Vince Russo wrote, probably not, because Vince McMahon doesn't seem like, if he walked away from the WWE, I don't know what he would do with himself.
He would have a lot of free time on his hands because he's so invested in this thing right now. He's so hands-on. I don't never see him selling it, to be honest.
No, you know what? It's interesting, though, because there's a divergent opinion on this. I know one person who has always been steadfast in believing that the end game for Vince McMahon is to sell this company is Court Bauer.
Right.
Court Bauer has been one of the people that said eventually Vince will sell this company. And Court had a fairly good relationship with Vince. So I mean, I'm not here to doubt him or say he's right, but you know, it's a possibility, I suppose. But it's one that I don't see happening like now. Like, now isn't the time for Vince to be selling this company. I think the time for Vince to sell this company is when he's made this network a success and the company is riding high. I don't think the company is riding high right now.
Oh, I'm 100% on board with that. Yeah, he's not going to leave the company, especially with the network in flux. If that is bringing in steady revenue, the subscribers number is up, then he might consider leaving. But at this time, it's not even on his mind.
Yeah, I just don't see that. I don't see that as a good end game for Vince McMahon right now, because the company, although, I mean, as much as people talk doom and gloom for the WWE right now, let's put this in perspective. This is a company that was doing very well for itself before all of this, and really, they don't have a lot of debt. I mean, they're going to lose money this year. Their numbers are not going to look great. But when all is said and done, this is a company that really doesn't have a lot of debt. And when you get deep into business talk, which we won't do here, obviously, because we're a wrestling show, but that is rare for any company to be operating with really next to no debt whatsoever.
They've made some shrewd decisions along the way, but at the same time, they have lost money. And you never want to lose money, even if it's not putting you deep into debt. And right now, like, again, the subscriber numbers, that has to be at a certain point before they start reaching with the, right now they're not making money on the network, right?
No, they haven't even reached a break-even point.
So it's going to take some time, and I'm so curious to see the number of subscribers. It's obviously going to rise when it hits Canada and it hits internationally, but right now it's a process, and the company isn't patient. Patience is not a virtue for them.
Vince McMahon is not patient. Forget the company. Vince McMahon is not patient.
McMahon is the company.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the names you hear that when you talk about heads that may roll in this, one of the names you always hear is George Barrios, because he is, when you get outside of the family people with Vince and with Stephanie and with Hunter, he's pretty much the big wig in that company aside from a McMahon family member, and things for him are riding on this more than maybe the absolute future of the WWE, but for him personally as an employed person, I think he has a lot riding on this.
Do you have a good Vince McMahon "you're fired" impression in you, James?
No, I don't. I don't want to even try, but that day could be coming. I'll work on it for if that day actually does come.
Awesome.
yeah, so obviously the network's been a big deal and will continue to be a big deal and a big point of conversation. This pay-per-view is coming up, but we already have the video leaked with Brock Lesnar and John Cena. I mean, does it even matter what happens on Sunday at this point? We're getting John Cena and Brock Lesnar for the belt. It looks like it's a 100% deadlock guarantee.
The card is stacked for Battleground. I'm not going to be pooping on it so much. It's just the results are pretty much a given at this point. The ad for SummerSlam, Lesnar, Cena. Although it wasn't indicated that it was going to be for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, I don't see why they would put the belt on Cena at Money in the Bank just to take it off him less than a month later at Battleground. So yeah, Cena's going to go over in the Fatal 4-Way match, but the match itself is going to be fantastic. It should be.
Well, here's the other thing, though, too. If we go by that and say, okay, yeah, Cena could lose, that's still going to be your main event at SummerSlam. And are you really going to put the title on Roman Reigns or Randy Orton and have that match play second fiddle to a John Cena-Brock Lesnar match? Obviously not. So, I mean, John Cena is going to be your champion. When we're talking to you next week, that's who still will be your WWE heavyweight champion, folks.
Well, I mean, not to cut you off, but it's not uncommon for the championship match to play second fiddle to something else. We just go back in time and look at CM Punk's 434-day reign as champion. He was never or rarely in the main event.
But, and maybe we can transition into this conversation of the whole legacy of CM Punk, because Roman Reigns has never been treated like CM Punk. Roman Reigns has been treated like the man since the day he walked in the door, and there's no way they're putting him in a situation like that, where CM Punk was the guy that kicked the door in to get to where he got, and everything that he got, he fought and scraped and clawed for. Roman Reigns has, I don't want to say handed to him on a silver platter, but it's all been there for him. He's just had to kind of carry the ball and not fall on his face.
Well, one time considered to be the weak link in the Shield, he goes on to set a record at Survivor Series, eliminating four guys by himself. He then hits up the Royal Rumble, the last guy eliminated after throwing over the most guys in Rumble history. They're trying to make him look like $1 million. He's going to be in the main event on Sunday for the title. They're definitely not going to be pushing him like CM Punk. Like you said, CM Punk basically forged his way to the top. But again, Roman Reigns wasn't handed anything, but you have to admit, he has the look that WWE is looking for.
He does, and I'm not faulting him. I'm just saying he wasn't a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk story. He was a preordained, selected story. And it's more about the guys that were with him in the Shield and their success that I think becomes the story out of that whole group. Does Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins actually live up to their potential and their success, which I think they are entitled to, too? I think Dean Ambrose, I still believe Dean Ambrose is the most talented of these three. I maintain that to this day. I think he's brilliant. I think, of all the things I hated on Raw, which was a list that we don't have time to get into, but the fact that Dean Ambrose was taken out of that show in the first 10 minutes, that was probably right at the top of the list.
Well, but then it goes to the main event where Seth Rollins, who was thrown over the top rope, it looked like he was legitimately injured. I think that changed the plans. I do believe that Ambrose was expected to come back out, but Rollins' tweaking of his knee probably set things in a different path.
But as it turns out, it doesn't look like Rollins' knee was hurt at all. It looks like he was selling, so it was part of the story.
Well, it could have been hurting in the moment is what I'm saying. He, you know, it's still up to interpretation whether or not he was fully selling, whether or not there was some legitimate injury there. He's still working. He's going to be there on Sunday. But other than that, I can't explain why Ambrose was taken out unless he was expected to be back later. But then that's just bad booking then.
Yeah, I mean, if Seth Rollins was selling and that was an angle, I mean, I'm left to wonder what the heck are you doing, WWE, because they gave every indication that Dean Ambrose was going to be back.
Exactly, but it's like, okay, with Seth Rollins, he gets thrown over the top rope. You see the camera kind of pan away from him, and it focuses on, you know, Reigns spearing Cena, and that's how the show closes. And then on SmackDown, which is going to air later tonight, this isn't going to spoil anything, but I don't think they really make any mention of his leg. So why is he selling that, and then they're not even going to bring it up later? And then there were fan reports saying that Rollins was noticeably limping on his way to the arena. So what about that?
I have no idea. I really don't know. Because if you looked like the first 20 minutes to a half an hour, I saw everything from like Seth Rollins blew out his knee to like all kinds of horror stories with what was going to happen with him, to the point that I thought, oh my gosh, the injury bug has struck the WWE again. It got Bryan, it got Barrett, and now against Rollins. Like, can this company just not catch a break? But by all reports, Seth Rollins is okay.
Thank God, too. We couldn't lose another guy. I mean, he's Mr. Money in the Bank. If he was to miss time, they could still keep the briefcase on him, unlike Bryan, who was the world champion, because it's good for up to a year. Odds are he would have only missed a couple of months if it was only, you know, a serious tweak or whatever. He didn't tear his ACL or something. But, yeah, it's confirmed he will be there on Sunday. Rollins, Ambrose.
And that, honestly, if Seth Rollins is 100%, that is the match of the night. Like on paper, it is the match of the night. And I think we discussed, I think it was on this podcast last week, that whole idea of having him and Dean Ambrose work a program for an entire year just excites me.
this won't be a one-off, that's for sure. Battleground is going to be the first of many, many matches on pay-per-view for these two.
Like, I think the whole concept of what they've done with that Money in the Bank briefcase and made Dean Ambrose the roadblock to Seth Rollins getting to the world title, I think is just phenomenal, and I think based on the characters involved, it makes total sense and should be an angle that they can really honestly play around with. And I'm telling you, they never do this nowadays, but I would literally have this play out all the way to Money in the Bank next year, that Rollins just can't cash in. And then as you get closer to Money in the Bank, the story will be reversed, and will Seth Rollins even be able to cash in Money in the Bank, or is Dean Ambrose going to literally stop him from cashing in? And we've never had that, where the Money in the Bank briefcase has never been cashed in.
But can they pull that off for a year, though? Won't that get kind of a little bit tiresome? Because at some point, fans are just going to want Rollins to cash it in.
Yeah, but, you know, if the story is always Dean getting in the way, maybe not, because fans really love Dean Ambrose.
But they don't necessarily despise Seth Rollins either. They're hoping for the best for him as well.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I think it's something you can really play around with. I would just like the threat of it. I would like it to get to a point where, you know, we've got by WrestleMania, and you know what? Seth still hasn't been able to cash that thing in. Money in the Bank's just around the corner. Is he even going to be able to? You know, or maybe he's forced into having to say, you know what? Screw it. Money in the Bank. I'm fighting for the title. It's my last night to do it. I'm doing it.
Well, it's certainly unique. But then again, you could just come up with the logic that, you know, just like what Rob Van Dam did when he won Money in the Bank, just set your date ahead of time, get a sanctioned match, and you don't have to worry about the whole running down to the ring and cashing it in.
Yeah, but that's the babyface thing to do.
It would annul Ambrose trying to screw him over, though.
No, it wouldn't. He could still get involved in the match and make it a DQ, and Rollins got his opportunity totally taken away from him.
All right, James.
I'm just saying.
I know.
But anyway, we did start this by saying about Punk and his whole legacy. I think when you look at Punk's career, if it's over, if it's really done, obviously this guy's a Hall of Famer. He's done everything you would expect of a Hall of Famer, and he's really had a career, in my mind, that's reminiscent of the career that Randy Savage has had to some extent. He's lived through an era where he was not the main guy, and he was always the 1B guy. Because Randy Savage always had to face the shadow of Hulk Hogan, and Lord knows that CM Punk has always had to face the shadow of John Cena.
That shouldn't take away from the success he had, but you're right. He worked during a time where he was champion for 434 days, but he was never the man. And that position is now still John Cena's. And that's an asterisk next to CM Punk's name. He was successful. He had the Summer of Punk. He had that infamous promo where he talked about, you know, Lesnar and Heyman and management while wearing his Stone Cold shirt, and that's going to live on forever. But, you know, at the same time, as good as CM Punk was, he was never as popular or as successful as Cena.
Oh, I don't know if those things are necessarily true.
So.
Because I think there was times, and why I use the comparison of Savage is I think there was times that Savage was more popular than Hogan. And
he went far between, though.
Yeah, but there were moments and there were times when Randy Savage was the guy. And it was Hogan trying to grasp onto what he had. And I think we've seen that with Cena, too, to an extent, dealing with CM Punk. I think there were moments where CM Punk was clearly the larger star than John Cena, even though the company might not have thought so and they might not have treated them as such. I think definitely CM Punk was the guy for a majority of this fan base. And it's interesting. And obviously, you know, Savage is in the Hall of Fame. We'll never truly get the answer to that, I don't think, because it just doesn't seem like people are going to be forthright and air everyone's dirty laundry, so to speak. But hopefully that gets corrected at some point. And I mean, CM Punk, he's obviously left this company in a bad way. And from all indications, it came out this week this company and CM Punk are perhaps in a worse state than when he actually left it, that they are not getting along at all.
It's two stubborn sides who aren't willing to reach a middle ground, and I don't think they ever will. If there was ever a guy, you know, we always talk about people who retire from the sport and they always make a return, or they always have like one final match or whatnot. I could easily see CM Punk never wrestling for the company again.
But then that gets to the point of, does CM Punk ever come back to be put in the Hall of Fame? And obviously it's something I think we both agree is deserving.
He's deserving, but so is Randy Savage, and look how that's playing out.
Exactly. And yet Coco Beware is a Hall of Famer.
Pretty much.
Coco Beware.
Coco.
Let that sink in, people. A guy with a bird who never won a title is in the WWE Hall of Fame.
As is Drew Carey.
Well, that too. But the celebrity wing is a whole different animal altogether. I think you can have a debate if people even want that in there at all. But, yeah, that's a whole other thing. But if we didn't have the celebrity wing, Mr. T never would have been able to thank his mama.
For 45 minutes.
Yes. So there you have that. Anyway, so that is everything that we can talk about with that subject, I think. Until Punk has more to say, I think that's pretty much it as far as he goes. And we'll see if he ever does even say anything, because that I question. I don't know how much of an explanation we're going to get from CM Punk. I really don't see him coming on a podcast and saying, hey, you know what, we haven't talked in a while. I haven't really said much since January, but here's really how it all went down. I don't expect to hear that.
He doesn't owe anyone an answer. It's open to interpretation. We all kind of have our own understanding of what happened, so let's just leave it at that.
Until otherwise spoken, yes, we will. And with that, what else is going on in the world of wrestling? Oh, I wanted to mention this. We are trying to get our little minutes of TNA in. And you have recently turned around a little bit on the TNA product. So I wanted your take on the fact that your TNA champion, and I do emphasize your TNA champion, Bobby Lashley, by God, he's going to fight in Bellator and fight some jobber guy with a 7-6 record. What happens if the jobber guy beats Bobby Lashley?
Which he probably will. I've seen Bobby Lashley do some MMA, and it wasn't always pretty. But, yeah, they're taking a chance here. And you know what? If Lashley loses, hell, they might take the belt off of him right away.
Well, the thing is, like, what's TNA going to do with this? That's my main question. Is Bobby Lashley going to go into this Bellator fight as the TNA World Champion?
Well, they're just risking, you know, it's a big risk on their part just having him compete in mixed martial arts. He can easily get hurt, break an arm, break a leg, but, you know, he's their TNA World Heavyweight Champion. They're between a rock and a hard place right now. I saw footage anyway last night. He wrestled Jeff Hardy, who's no longer Willow. I don't know why that happened.
Because Matt came back, remember? He screwed over ROH, took the big paycheck.
Well, not yet, though. That hasn't happened yet.
Okay, but that is why he's Jeff Hardy again.
Well, Jeff Hardy did an interview, one of those stupid backstage segments they do, and he said, oh, it was Kurt Angle who convinced me to go back to Jeff Hardy. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll work with that for now. But it was
him and Kurt Angle were doing some drinking and some drugs. And
like, hey, man, you want to be Hardy again? Cool, man.
Although Kurt Angle claims he has not touched a thing in over a year.
I'll believe him.
According to JR's podcast.
Well, that stupid story that came out that WWE guys were taking pictures of him asleep on a plane and they thought he was knocked out because he was intoxicated. Maybe he was just sleeping. You ever thought of that?
Or, well, maybe they knew he was intoxicated, too.
They could, but, I mean, give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He has gone to rehab. He says he hasn't touched alcohol.
Wait a second, Chris Walder. When does the benefit of the doubt wear out for people? Because I believe Kurt Angle has definitely crossed the line more than a few times. Wow,
that's my Olympic hero, damn it. Don't hate Kurt Angle.
No, but wow, wasn't that a nice little segue? He crossed the line. Did you get that?
I did. Yeah, they haven't used that line in years, though.
Ah, so,
cross,
you know,
the line and that stupid theme song.
Let me just say, my believability in Kurt Angle is severely damaged to the point that I don't necessarily believe a word that comes out of his mouth.
God, so mean, so vindictive.
I base it
that's
on
the last night that's on the video podcast, man.
I base it on history. His history is bad. Do you believe what Hulk Hogan has to say?
Oh, of course. It's Hogan. He never
So Hulk Hogan was, in fact, going to be the bassist on Metallica. You believe that?
Well, Roman Reigns is already a bassist for Metallica, if you get that little subtle hint.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is Hulk Hogan has been proven a liar more times than he would like to care to admit. And I think Kurt Angle is ranking up there in that category. Not to say they're the only people in wrestling where that's true, but there's a strong case that they have not always been truthful. And when that is the case, I tend not to believe what they have to say. Call me crazy, Chris Walder, but I just don't believe them.
Well, you're crazy, and Kurt Angle still has the power to convince Jeff Hardy that he should no longer be Willow, so I don't know if it was the alcohol that talked, but Kurt Angle made things happen.
Or the cheap drugs that Jeff Hardy probably still is doing. Because we do not hear Jeff Hardy claiming any sobriety of any kind that I have heard.
He should have just said that Willow was just one bad trip.
Yeah, Jeff Hardy is probably on that medical marijuana RVD plan.
Where's your paperwork, Hardy?
Yeah, he had a cold. Best way to cure a cold?
Weed.
In California, that's pretty much how you do it.
Exactly.
Not that I would know, because I have never lived in California, but I am told by sources.
Hearing through the grapevine.
Yeah. Well, remember were you a fan of Entourage at all?
No, I would have never gotten into that show.
Oh, okay. Well, there was an episode where Johnny Drama tried to get himself... No, he didn't want medical marijuana. All he wanted was they had this cool shirt at a medical marijuana place, and he tried to get himself prescribed medical marijuana just so he could get the shirt. So,
my goodness. Yeah, that's exactly why I didn't watch the show.
Oh, no, it was a great show. It was great.
I'm glad you liked it.
Ronda Rousey's going to be in the movie. I'm excited.
Here's your daily Ronda Rousey mention.
Well, she is ESPN's Female Athlete of the Year.
She sure had a lot of competition to go up against.
Well, you know, those WNBA stars just aren't getting over like they used to.
When you beat someone in 16 seconds, they'll give you anything.
Hey.
You're a certified badass at that point.
16 seconds. Deal with that. WWE Divas Division, what would you do with that?
Sheamus couldn't pull that off, but Ronda could.
Ronda could tap out Cameron in 2 seconds.
Well, that's not up for debate. Of course she could. Into her soul, she can make Cameron tap out.
She could tap out Eva Marie just by looking at her.
God. The red-haired vixen.
No, you know what my new name for her is? I believe I dropped it on the video podcast last night. If I didn't...
Garbage?
No. I call her the red-headed stepchild of Total Divas. Is that not the perfect name for her?
That's pretty good.
The red-headed stepchild of Total Divas. And then, of course, there is the forgotten stepchild of Total Divas, JoJo.
JoJo. Where you at, girl?
Apparently, on one of the NXT tapings recently, she was a ring announcer, so she's not gone.
Oh, bless her heart.
They're trying to find something for that girl to do. Clearly, it wasn't wrestling.
And they need to find her, period. How tall is she? Like 4'8"?
Yeah, she's very tiny.
Stuff her in your back pocket. Maybe Vince has her there.
Well, Randy Orton did date her at one time.
But then he lost her, and then that was that.
Yes.
It's like, you're just so damn hard to find in the morning.
No, I don't think that was the problem. But anyway, is there anything else that we should delve into? Oh, I guess we did touch on Sting on the video podcast, right?
The Stinger, yeah. The man with no wrestling contract, but apparently he has a PR contract. They're selling his merch already on WWE.com. And TMZ reported that he would like to have at least one match, preferably against Undertaker at WrestleMania, but chances of that are slim to none.
Although, are they? Because we had Triple H, which we did mention on the video podcast, dropped serious hints that we might see Sting in a ring. Then, late last night, after we were done the video podcast, Vince McMahon talked about life imitating art. Or would it?
What was that a hint of?
I assume it's a hint of Sting wrestling for the WWE, because in the video game, obviously that would be the art, and he is definitely a character you can wrestle with in the
video
game.
That went right over my head. I had no idea. I saw the tweet from Vince, and I'm like, what is he getting at here?
You see, Vince and I are on a different level from you, Walder.
You clever bastards, you.
We are. We're on a different level. Although he has not been able to use that kind of Jedi mind trickery to get his WWE network over.
Well, there you go.
He has not. It has not worked out well. So anyway, I think that is about all, unless you can come up with some other things.
Quickly, before we go, last night when I was doing my Battleground picks, I may have been a little bit off. James pointed that out several times.
When I made my picks. Please go back and watch Chris Walder's picks, and you judge for yourself.
I want to redo with sub.
All right, fine.
I want to pick redo. Okay,
we'll run
all,
through this real quick then.
We'll
Battleground
really
picks. The video will be there forever, though, Chris Walder, where
Walder
you,
picks.
In fact, picked Cameron to win a wrestling match.
I'm still picking Cameron. Don't get me wrong. I'm going with Cameron. That's not the pick I'm switching up here.
Well, then
I'm
going to
live
and
die with my
this?
Cameron pick.
Well, then why are we doing this?
Because that's the only match you thought I was an idiot. You thought I had some other silly picks as
oh,
well.
Oh, I thought all your picks were really out there. The only thing you got right was John Cena was going to win. I think that's about the only thing.
God.
And I will give you the fact that Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose is pretty much a toss-up. Other than that, I thought you picked every other match wrong.
Okay, quickly, I'm going to do this fast. Paige and AJ, I said Paige, I was an idiot, it's going to be AJ Lee. I'm sorry I even went with Paige. AJ is going to beat Paige, and she's going to throw a hissy fit. They're going to have a rematch at SummerSlam. Okay, what else did I get wrong? I said that Harper and Rowan were going to win the tag team titles.
You didn't.
I was wrong
you
there.
Said the Usos were going to win.
Oh, did I say the Usos? Okay, well, then
which
right
you've
the
hated
Usos.
On the Usos on
I
this
hate
show,
the
which
Usos.
Made no sense whatsoever in you picking them. So
I'm turning face just for this match. Usos will win. What else did I say? I think I had Jericho going over Wyatt. I'm switching that. I'm going to go with Bray Wyatt. Brian Fritz, you changed my mind. Your interview was so damn good. I'm going with Wyatt. what else is there on the card? Rollins and Ambrose. I said that was going to a no contest, right?
Yeah, that was the one I thought that was some real clever booking on your part.
I'm switching. Was that sarcasm, or did you think that was clever?
No, it was sarcasm.
Oh, God, son of a, whatever. I'm switching it. It's not going to be a no contest, because I like to pick winners. I'm not going the crap route and saying it's not going to have an actual result. I'm going to go with Seth Rollins. This continues on to SummerSlam, and hopefully until the rest of the year, because we want to see Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose fight it out. Obviously, the main event, John Cena's going to win. What am I missing? Oh, yeah, Rusev and Swagger. Rusev is going to win. But other than that, yeah, I switched my Divas Championship pick, but I'm going to live and die with Cameron. She's my homie. We go way back. She's going to shock the world. Best match of the night, or at least on the pre-show. It'll be the best match of the pre-show. I guarantee you that.
What? The best match of the pre-show. Very good. I wanted to end this podcast with girl bye and refer to Walder as the girl, but unfortunately we can't do that because I want to mention something else. I will add a link on with the podcast here that you're listening to. My friends over at Between the Ropes, who we mentioned, Brian Fritz doing all those great interviews. We also have a contest going on over at that particular site where you can win $50. Chris Walder, of course, will not, because it involves picking winners for Battleground, which clearly he has proven he is not capable of doing. But
you know
maybe,
what, James?
But maybe you are out there in listener land, and if you get over to the site before Sunday and lock in your picks, you can have a chance to win $50. It's basically kind of like your old school fantasy football. Every wrestler has an amount of money that they cost. You pick five, don't run out of money. If they all win, well, then you're in the running to win $50.
$50, that's beer money right there. I'm picking Cameron as my number one.
I wonder how much she costs. I did not look that up. You
actually gain money
back
if you pick her.
No, you don't. Anyway, in fact, I don't even know if that was listed because it's on the pre-show. It might not be.
There goes my bugaboo right there.
There will be a link on the site. Look below this podcast, and you will see it. Click on that, go sign up, and then come back, click on the link again, and join up and have your shot to win $50 and help out the guys Between the Ropes as they help you out trying to win $50. So it's worth it because they're doing some excellent work over there. I mean, like, they have really had their working boots on this week. I've been trying to do my part. And by the way, I will be on their post show for Battleground. It'll be me and Steve Muehlhausen doing a podcast recapping all the ongoings of Battleground such as they were. So that is in your world too. Aside from that, here at Condo on the Moon, we will be back Thursday, new time, 7:30, with the video podcast, and back here on Friday with the audio podcast, somewhere usually right around the time SmackDown ends. It becomes available to you, the general public, and we thank you for checking out what we do, and please, by all means, follow us at Condo on the Moon, and tell your friends if you like what you're hearing, and that's about all from me. Chris Walder, do you have anything else to add to bury yourself further?
No, I'm pretty much 6 feet under at this point, but before we go, follow me on Twitter at Walder Sports. Next Thursday, me and James, as always, doing the video podcast, 7:30 new time.
Yes, and that is about it, folks. We thank you for tuning in, and pretty soon we'll be cranking up the guests again, because you know what? It's not too long, and Chris Walder, you got to get on this. ROH coming to Toronto in September, so
we're trying to go.
We're not trying. We're going. You are getting the tickets, so this is very dependent on you. So we are going, sir. Because
look who's dependent on me now after bashing my picks.
Well, I'm dependent on you to get the tickets. That's about all. I'm not dependent on you to pick matches. Thank God. But that being said, ROH will be coming back around our way in Toronto, and like we did for their pay-per-view, we're going to crank it up and be bringing in some of the guests we had back then and maybe some new ones. Maybe the Macho Man Challenge will happen.
Ooh, teaser.
It might. You never know. Silesia has said she might help me out here, so maybe it'll happen. Jay Lethal and me, one-on-one. The Randy Savage off to end all Randy Savage offs. That alone will be perhaps the best thing that's ever happened in this podcast.
Next to my picks.
No. No. That is, if we do a worst of show, it's starting with your pick of Cameron.
Yay, I'm going to be the highlight.
You will be. You could be number one.
Aw, yeah.
All righty. Well, that is it, folks. Hope you enjoy Battleground. Hope you enjoy your week of wrestling. And if you're one of the lucky few to get out there in Dearborn, Michigan and see the last match for Kevin Steen, good for you. Him and Steve Corino are going to get it on in Dearborn, Michigan. And all the best to Kevin Steen as he embarks on what we think is a journey towards the WWE. And a nicer guy it could not happen to. All the best to Kevin Steen, and good luck to him in his journey wrestling wise because you know what, he's a pretty good guy and he's done a lot for this business on the lower levels like independent wrestling and ROH and PWG. And if you don't have time for Kevin, I don't really have time for you. It's that simple. He's just that good a guy and he really deserves this. So we hope for the best. And we will be back next week talking more professional wrestling in your ears. So please come back for that and join us.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better. More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.